Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We're here today speaking with Dr. Tricia Pine. She's director of the Associated Archives at St. Mary's Seminary and University in Roland Park. Dr. Pine, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
The Archdiocese of Baltimore is the oldest diocese. St. Mary's Seminary is the oldest American seminary. And the Sulpicians, who operate St. Mary's, were the first order that Bishop John Carroll sought for assistance in here in the new Diocese of Baltimore. You oversee the collection of all three of these entities, making it one of the most important jobs in preserving the history of the American Church. How does that make you feel when you walk in every morning knowing that you have such an important job?
Well, it really is a privilege to be steward of the collections that are so significant to understanding the founding and development of the Catholic Church in this country. And the program they've created here in Baltimore is pretty unique. It came about through the collaborative effort of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, St. Mary's Seminary, and the U.S. province of the Sulpicians, and serves as the repository of these three organizations' archives. And the idea for bringing these archives together is credited to Cardinal William Keeler. And he's the one that suggested that they jointly fund the building of this new facility at St. Mary's, which opened in the spring of 2002. So we're just marking our, 13th anniversary very shortly. And they continue to share the cost of operating the program. And in bringing these collections together, it really highlights the long and shared history of these three institutions that, as you said, dates back to the founding period of the U.S. Catholic Church. And as you point out, it also includes two archbishops who were also Sulpicians. And so there really is a very close history between the Sulpicians, St. Mary's, and the Archdiocese.
That's great. So the collections, while they're all housed together, they're separate. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. Each institution continues to own their archives, and they have specific policies for caring for their records and for access and how they're managed. So they're all in one facility, but there's three different areas that have been allocated in the building for where the collections are housed, and the division between them is very clear.
That must make for a very expansive collection, and I'm wondering how they're organized.
Sure. Well, for the most part, we have a paper. It's largely a paper archives in our holdings. We have letters of the archbishops, administrative papers for the provincials of the Sulpicians and for the operation of the seminary. We also have things like photos, and we have a small library, very few artifacts. We also have a collection of sacramental registers from the archdiocese parishes on microfilm, which is probably one of our most heavily used collections in the holdings, and we also have the archdiocesan newspapers and microfilm as well. So it's a good mix, but it's mainly paper beeps. So you have to be prepared to read when you come
to be able to get through
a lot
of paper. So can you give us a little bit of a feel for some of the more notable pieces that are in the collection that might be of interest to some folks?
Well, sure. Probably the most important document that we have in our holdings is the papal document that established Baltimore as the first diocese in this country and appointed John Carroll bishop. We also have letters from U.S. presidents, including Jefferson, Madison, Teddy Roosevelt. We have letters and drawings of Henry Benjamin Latrobe, the father of American architecture, who designed Baltimore's first cathedral. We have letters from bishops around the country and around the world, letters from the Holy See on a whole range of matters. We also have things like letters from the holy men and women from the archdiocese who responded to the cause of the local church and went on to found religious communities, hospitals, schools, and churches here. And we also have letters from the laity that talk about their experience of what it was like to settle in Baltimore, Baltimore, frequently from a foreign land, the struggles they went through to find jobs, support their families, build churches and schools for their communities, and just to share what it meant to be a Catholic in Baltimore. So it's a wide range of matters. I always say it's not just a collection of documents that we have in our buildings. These are the documents that give witness to the history of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, and they really are a legacy, and why it's so important that we preserve them and take such good care of them.
You mentioned President Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt. He was particularly close to Cardinal Gibbons, who was the longest-serving Archbishop of Baltimore, wasn't he?
That's correct. He was our ninth Archbishop, and he came into office in 1877 and died in 1921, so that was quite a long period of time to be in office. He was recognized to be leader of the U.S. Catholic Church during that time period, and so this is why we see U.S. presidents turning to him for advice on different matters, particularly on Catholic issues or matters that affected the Catholic community, and one of those presidents that he became quite close to was Teddy Roosevelt. So we do have a number of letters and photographs of the two of them together.
That must be pretty interesting, though, when you're able to go through the archives and see letters that, you know, you're holding letters that were written by U.S. presidents.
Oh, absolutely. Pretty special, along with letters from those who went on to be declared saints, such as Elizabeth Ann Seton or St. John Neumann. So it's always just a thrill to open up a box, and sometimes you're never quite sure what you're going to find, but then
right. You
usually will find a treasure.
I would imagine there'll be people who hear this program who may have some interest in seeing those documents that are publicly available for view. Is the archives available to the public, and if so, how do they make that happen?
Sure, we are. We do have a web page that has a good description of the holdings that we have in our archives and what's open for people to consult. We do require that people make appointments to come in and work with the material. I said some of our most heavily used collections are the sacramental records, which is why we do require appointments, because we do have so many people coming in to take a look at them, and also those who want to look at the archdiocesan newspapers, our collection of directories for people who want to go back and reconstruct what their parish looked like over time. They want to see who the pastors were, how many people were attending their parish, who was operating the school, how many students are enrolled, so things like that. So we have a number of resources that are of great interest both to the family historian and the parish historian. We also have a number of scholars and graduate students who come in who are working on various projects, books, articles, dissertations, who do need to have access to the papers of the Archbishop and the provincials of the Sulpicians to develop a better understanding of the project that they're researching.
Why is it important to preserve history by holding on to such things as letters and photographs?
Well, I think as I mentioned a minute ago, we really have to see these as our legacy. They give voice to those who went before us and relate to them, their experiences, their struggles, their triumphs, their witness to what it was to be a Catholic at a certain point in time. And these documents allow us to do that. They allow us to go back and reconstruct what was happening at a particular point in time and understand what the Church was going through in different points in history.
And how is technology evolved and changed the way people who do what you do?
Well, it's had a tremendous impact on our research. It's allowed us to do many things that we weren't able to do in the past, particularly in how we organize our material. Where it's really had the greatest impact probably is in our ability to digitize a number of our holdings, specifically photographs. In the past, when someone wanted a copy of a photograph, we would have to take it out to a photo lab and then go back and pick it up, and it was a very time-consuming process. But now we can just scan it in to the dimensions and specifications of the people who made the request, send it to them, and then once it's scanned in, we can continue to use it in whatever format, either for other requests or in publications or on the website. So it really just enables us to do so much more with our photo holdings, and so much quicker and more efficiently for the staff.
You mentioned the Sacramento records are popular, and I assume that's because you have people doing genealogy, family history research.
Right.
So what advice do you have for the amateur, if not the expert, genealogist?
Well, again, we have a page on our website that is dedicated just for those who are interested in working on their family history. It reviews what we have in our holdings, but also we have a number of resources and suggestions for those who are just getting started, the information that they'll need to know to get started to identify where their family lived, what parish they might have attended. We have links to a number of other resources, just as census records, online directories, different repositories that have records that would be of interest to those working on their family history. So would recommend anyone who does have some questions as to how they get started or perhaps maybe how they continue their research if they've run into a dead end to take a look at our website for some suggestions.
Well, I'm sure the information that you are making available on your website, as well as the wonderful organization of the archives, will make it as easy as possible and the people who come there. And again, for information, visit the archives webpage, which is part of the St. Mary's website.
That's correct. It's stmarys.edu.
Perfect. And for more information, please visit that website. Dr. Tricia Pine from St. Mary's Seminary, thanks for being with us.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. When teachers arrive at St. Elizabeth School in Baltimore and Villa Maria School in Timonium, both Catholic institutions that educate children with special needs, they are often looking to establish experience and credibility in their field. Often, they never leave. Doug Loftus, a 28-year-old teacher at Villa Maria who began his career as an assistant at St. Elizabeth, says he can't imagine doing anything else. "I feel like I make a difference," Loftus said. He added, "You get a bunch of tough days, but you just need to see the light bulb click every once in a while." Villa Maria, operated by Catholic Charities of Baltimore, educates approximately 90 students ages 5 through 15 at its location off Delaney Valley Road. St. Elizabeth, located in the Edner Gardens Lakeside neighborhood, educates 116 students ages 6 to 21. Learn more about these institutions in the latest print edition or at CatholicReview.org. In other news, Friday is St. Patrick's Day. It is also a Friday in Lent. However, you won't have to eat your cabbage by itself. Baltimore Archbishop William E. Laurie has granted a dispensation to Catholics in the Archdiocese allowing meat on Friday, March 17th. Catholics taking advantage of the dispensation are encouraged to make some other response that day. Service to the poor, giving alms, and extra prayer are some examples. Speaking of prayer, somebody was, because the bill that would have legalized physician-assisted suicide in Maryland was withdrawn on Friday, March 3rd. That's not to say stop praying. Proponents of assisted suicide will be back next year. These stories and many more at CatholicReview.org. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is Eric Zygmunt.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, The Catholic Review. Pick up the print magazine monthly at your parish or have The Catholic Review delivered to your home every month. You can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at CatholicReview.org. That's CatholicReview.org.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
Welcome back to Catholic Baltimore. This is Sean Kane. We're here today with Dr. Rod Mortel, who's the director of the Office of Missions for the Archdiocese of Baltimore. Deacon Mortel, welcome.
Thank you.
So you've worked for the Archdiocese for many years. Can you talk a little about what your current role is and how it was that you came to work here?
I was appointed Director of Missions for the Archdiocese of Baltimore by His Eminence Cardinal Keeler in 2001, 2 weeks following my ordination as a deacon. I was recommended to the position by my predecessor, Monsignor Victor Galeon, who became bishop of the Diocese of St. Augustine in Florida.
Great. And people can obviously tell by your accent that you're not from here. So can you talk a little bit about your background? And it will become obvious now what your current job is.
Well, I was born and raised in Haiti and went to medical school in Haiti, practiced general medicine in Haiti for 2 years before I came to the United States via Montreal, Canada. Then I was further trained in obstetric and gynecology at the Hahnemann Medical College in Philadelphia, and then in gynecologic oncology at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. I joined Penn State in 1972 as an assistant professor and became head of the Department of OBGYN at Penn State, a position that I held for 13 years before I became an associate dean and founding director of the Penn State University Cancer Center.
So now you, as part of your role with the Archdiocese, you direct something called the Haiti Outreach Project. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That is correct. The Baltimore-Haiti Project was funded, I would say, by His Eminence Cardinal Keeler, and it consists of a partnership between the Archdiocese of Baltimore and also the Diocese of Gonaive in Haiti. Now, this program is centered around the two dioceses, but filtered down to the parishes. So we have a program. Within the program, we have the parish partnership program, which consists of a sister parish relationship between the parishes of the Archdiocese of Baltimore and the parishes of the Diocese of Gonaive in Haiti. And it is intended to forge bonds of a relationship between the parishioners of the Archdiocese and those of the Diocese of those of the Diocese of Gonaive, and which expose the parishioners of the Archdiocese not only to a country of different culture, but also a country with a very rich spirituality.
One obviously important benefit of that relationship was the tragic earthquake in Haiti and the opportunity for the Archdiocese to support our sisters and brothers there. Can you talk a little bit about how Haiti was impacted by the earthquake, and more recently, in your most recent visit, how you find it today, and maybe how the Archdiocese was able to support it?
Well, immediately after the earthquake, we traveled to Haiti with the Catholic Relief Services and work as part of the Archdiocese team, you know, to help medically the people of of Haiti. And the schools that comprise the mission of the Archdiocese, the schools were not affected greatly. There were some minor problem with the school, but that were fixed very well and rapidly. However, these schools of the mission receive a large number of students who were whose schools were totally leveled in Port-au-Prince. This was one way. The other way that the Archdiocese assist again is to build a trade school to help the youth of the of the Diocese of Gonaïves to benefit of the technique available in the United States that were not available in Haiti.
Right. So you visited there most recently. So how are things now?
But things are progressing, but painfully slowly. I mean, with a country that had no infrastructure, you can understand why the progress has been slow. However, I must say that the number of people who are living in tents has decreased considerably. And I think this is progress.
What the Haiti Outreach Project is just one area that your office is involved in. Or what are some of the other things that the missions office of the Archdiocese is involved in?
Well, as part of the Haiti program, also I need to indicate that we have a program for the youth, where the youth of the school of the Archdiocese travel to Haiti every summer to have camp with the students of our schools in Haiti. And besides that mission, we have started a talk to trying to establish a relationship with the diocese in Cuba, the diocese of Pina del Rio, the one the closest to the United States. This is still on the exploration stage. However, we visited Cuba, visited with the bishop of that particular diocese, and he came to the United States in September and visited various set of the Catholic charities in the Archdiocese.
And finally, what are your thoughts on the recent developments in terms of U.S.-Cuban relations?
Well, I supported wholeheartedly the decision of the administration to really alleviate the situation of the people in Cuba. The embargo has been in place for over 50 years, and I'm very sensitive to the embargo because my father died as a direct result of the embargo that United States imposed on Haiti in our 1994. There were no antibiotics, no medications that people had access to. And that's exactly what I found in Cuba when I went 2 years ago and again last year. The priests of various parishes have to get some medicine for their parishioners when they are sick. Mm. So I think the people of Cuba will benefit immensely.
How can people learn more about the missions office? Is that through the website of the Archdiocese?
Yeah, the website of the diocese is kept updated as far as the activities of the mission office, and also High Hopes for Haiti, which is the mouthpiece of the Motel Family Foundation, is also a site to visit, because the Motel Family Charitable Foundation is the organization that really operate the schools, the mission that the Archdiocese establishes in Haiti.
Excellent. So for more information about the missions office and the Haiti Outreach Project, you can visit archbalt.org or just Google search Mortel Family Charitable Foundation for more information. Dr. Mortel, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, they are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.